In this podcast, if you can hear me over the racket of parrots, I'm going to tell you a few party tricks you can do with the number pi. That's pi. Let me go. It's 3.141592653589. That's several decimal points. I'll show you how to. The trick I do to remember that, and it always impresses students if you write out pi and just keep on writing out more decimal places beyond what they can actually get on their calculator. It's sort of just a quiet statement. I don't know how I've just sort of naturally remembered. I suppose I remembered that I did it because I saw a calculator once which had the number wrong, and I instantly saw it. I don't know how it got it wrong. It was the late 70s. This was Texas Instrument 1. It was TI-71 or something like that. An old calculator which is going on the blink and got the wrong number. This is Peter Hill Explains, where I discuss things scientific. I've been going through general podcasting, the podcasting techniques, and this is more the high-level structural podcast. So I've had a few podcasts which required several podcasts to listen to get to the bottom of things, like comments, or podcasts where I've had to introduce an idea, the general idea, and go more complex. Perhaps I've taken you too far with the last podcast on semiconductors, where I tried, I don't know how successful I was in getting you to visualize two numbers at the same time, the actual wave function and the actual quantum number. That's something you have to do to be able to work through it, but I don't know how successful it is. This one, I'm looking just a fill-in podcast, filling back on the number pi. Pi is a... so that's the background for it. Pi is sort of a number which sort of crops up as your friend, as you do the new physics. It turns up in all these unusual numbers at places. So when you calculate something, you say, hey, that is pi. So the first thing which is always handy to put in your kit bag to do with the number of pi, just roughly, the number of seconds in a year is pi by 10 to the 7. So there are 10 pi by 10 million seconds in a year. Very useful if you're looking at geosynchronous orbits and you have to do periods and hours in seconds. It gives you pretty much straight the number of seconds in a year's orbit. Correction. Right, so geosynchronous, that's in a day, but for a year, an orbit is in seconds there. What's the birds? Oh, there's these whole little birds trying to get rid of an eagle at the top here. It's rather one of those things, they all band together and fight off the eagles which fly around our area. So pi. Pi is a very interesting thing. I promised a party trick with pi. How can you calculate pi with a piece of roughly 10 meters of string and a piece of chewing gum? How could you do it? Now, just remember what pi is. You've got a circle, and you've got a length of string equal to the diameter of the circle, and pi is the number of times, the number of lengths of diameter which goes around the circumference of a circle. That's 3.141592653589. That's about it. That's the amount of lengths of string that you have to go around. So we're going to give you the first way of measuring pi, and it's a length of string, a piece of chewing gum, and a stopwatch. And the thing is that if you measure out the length of string equal to the gravitational, your local gravitational acceleration, whack a piece of chewing gum on it, and hold the piece of string, and let that oscillate as a pendulum, that pendulum will have a general oscillation time. That's from where you let it go to where it comes to the furthest point and then returns back into your hand. That will have a period of oscillation equal to 2 pi. This is there's more formulas in that. So what happens is that string up your string 9.8 meters long, and you put your piece of pie, your piece of chewing gum on it, so it's a nice little weight at the end of it. You hold it and you release it, and when it the amount of time it takes to come to rest a second time a distance away, that's equal to pi seconds. So that will take you 3.141, and the reason is that the formula for the period of a pendulum, that is to swing from your hand, come to a rest and come back into your hand, that's a full period of a pendulum, is 2 pi the square root the length of string on the local gravitational constant g. So if you put L equals g, that's just 2 pi. It's a period of time, so the period to go half is pi, so that's a way to do it. And that's an interesting way, because if you talk about that, people automatically remember the formula for a period of a pendulum. But then you can work a bit more, and you can say, look, if I have a length of string equal to 1 metre, and you measure the period, and people will say, well, that going from rest to rest is 1 second, or rest back is 2 seconds. How comes that? Well, one of the proposals for the measuring a meter is the length of string necessary for it to equal 1 second oscillation. So that's interesting in itself, but what's the actual mathematics of it? So how come 2 pi 2 times 3.141, etc., the square root of 1 on 9.8, how come that works out to 2? And the answer is that this is the next magic thing of pi, is that the square root of 10 is almost exactly pi. So if you ever have pi on one side, you can move it to the other side and drop a unit of 10. It's one of those tricks which sort of rather stun people. In this case, it's 1 on the square root of 1 on 10, the square root of a tenth is 1 on pi. So 2 times pi times 1 on pi leaves 2, and that's how you get it. So that's one thing to do with pi. Now, there's a bit more if you get into the meter. So are we lucky? It could well be that if people used their second to an alien civilization with a different measurement of g, would still their meter could still be 1 second oscillation. So it could well be that other planets with different gravitational g's will have different times and lengths, such that they also wind up with a acceleration pi squared. try to get that into your head. Pi squared is actually a little bit closer. Oh, I can't remember. It's a bit over 10 or less than 10. It's an interesting thing to do. We've got another few interesting facts that the Earth is it's got a diameter of 4 pi 1,000 kilometers across, or it's 2 pi 1,000 kilometers from the center to the surface, and it's not exactly, it's out by a few hundred kilometers, but more or less, if you're doing quick calculations, it's an easy way to remember heaps of factors, like the number of seconds in a year, or diameters of Earths and things like that. Now, the actual historical, if you actually dig down into that, there's the pi squared equals 10, just roughly speaking. I can visualize the numbers, but I won't say it at this point in time, because I'll embarrass myself, because they won't be exact. I hope you're following me at this stage. So go to your calculator, type in the square root of 10, write 10 square root and you'll see it's roughly pi. And then we've got these pi related units of Earth. And it's sort of no mistake that it is like this, because you've got pi equals the square root of 10 roughly. And also the circumference of Earth is 40,000 kilometers, or 40 million meters, depends how you, 1,000 meters in a kilometer, so 1,000 thousandths in a million, 40,000 kilometers around, because the French, when they were trying to nail down what the meter is, they said, well, what we'll do is we'll make the meter 1/10 millionth of the distance from the equator through Paris to the North Pole. And of course, they had eventual problems that as they proceeded, I think this was done at around the time of the French Revolution when they were introducing metrics, but a bit before, the Earth was definitely not circular, and the gravitational field wasn't the same. So because they made equator to the pole 10,000 kilometres, equator to the pole, to the equator, to the South Pole, to the equator, and back again, is 40,000 kilometres. So 40,000 equals pi d, that's by definition, pi, which is d times the square root of 10. The square root of 10 is something that you can take around the other side. That's 4,000 equals 4,000 equals pi the diameter. What you can do is put the 4 out. We're going to say it's 4. 4 times 10,000 equals the diameter times the square root of 10. The square root of 10 times the square root of 10 times 1,000 equals the square root of 10 times d. Cancels the square root of 10, so you've got 4. The square root of 10 times 1,000 equals diameter. The square root of 10 equals pi. So you've got 4 pi, 1,000 equals the diameter. So it's 4 pi, 1,000 metres, equals the diameter. So if you look up the diameter of the Earth, you'll see that's a rough approximation. Okay, the French got the circumference of the Earth not absolutely perfect, because they were actually not going around the oblate belly of the Earth. Pi is not exactly the square root of 10. But if you put in those approximations, you get those interesting facts. So what does it mean? It means overall that you get a sort of a bit of an insight into how the meter is made. You get a bit of insight into the formula for of oscillation of a pendulum. You get sort of a bevy of shortcuts for doing in your head calculations. Now, we no longer have to do this as much with computers and Instacalc and other online resources, but it's still useful for if you're looking at things and you're thinking things, you can in your head start to do some rough calculations. I should stop at this point in time and say, what is behind the period of a pendulum? How come the period of a pendulum, one of the major things of the period of a pendulum, for small deviations, the period of the pendulum is dependent on the gravitational field. You can organize pendulums which aren't inertial pendulums, that is, pendulums which go about rock against a spring. But pendulums which rock against this spring of gravity, they're dependent on the gravitational field. And the thing with pendulum, this is a sort of a take-home message, I'm sort of giving you party tricks with pi, but secretly slipping in calculation techniques with you. Okay, if you haven't picked that up, I've slipped in the formula for the oscillation of pendulum. I'll just repeat that. It's 2 pi the square root the length of the pendulum on g, the local gravitational field, in meters per second squared. That's m dot s minus 2. I'll have to talk about how we do units. And L is in meters, so everything's all physics formulas only work. Yeah, physics formulas only work if you use meters, seconds, kilograms. If you use anything else, you'll have to go over to the American, the dark side, and actually put in feet and all these other calculations. But essentially, a pendulum is got a period independent of how far you pull it aside. There's if you pull it significantly aside, such that the force is not proportional to the angle, and eventually it can't be. The force is not proportional to the angle. It sort of chunks down. Gets a non-linear or a non-formula oscillation. You'll get it. And I think the more you pull it, the slower it goes. It sort of hangs up. You know that when you're swinging yourself in a swing, and there's something, some physics in that, just sitting on a swing and swinging your base legs and coupling it to the friction to get your swing. I've sat many hours on a swing trying to figure out how it actually works. But getting back to it, we're just going to do a fun little piece of physics things. I was thinking ahead in my head whether I'll actually drag you through the Newton formulas or just expect you to remember. So you're pulling a pendulum away from equilibrium. The force is proportional to angle, or the distance, and the small angles is the distance pulled back. So it's actually a hook spring force. There's the force, restoring force is proportional to x, your displacement. So F equals kx, and so it changes sign as you move, it goes through zero. There's no restoring force at the very center, but if you move it, it's proportional to x. And so to actually calculate the actual instantaneous motion of a spring is your differential equation, where you have to guess and put in signs and prove it works. But one of the beauties of Newton's is that the way that he did it, you avoid that, and by using his thing of energy, and it only works in piecewise continuous hook law things, that sort of uniform acceleration. So look, if we pull this spring back to a maximum displacement, the amount of energy stored there under the pi, that's force times distance, integrate that, that's a half kx squared. All right, that's your, so your maximum displacement, the amount of energy stored in your spring or your thing, is some constant k, a half kx squared, and that amount of energy gets converted to pure kinetic energy. So it increases in velocity to a point in which the kinetic energy in the center is half mv squared. Got a kinetic energy in the center of half mv squared. And so if you put it in the overall center, that the more you displace it, the greater, the higher your central velocity is. And your displacement related to the velocity, just hand waving. So if you've got a greater displacement, it's actually traveling proportionally faster in the center. And just by looking at scaling, so if you looked at the scaling of this, you can see just by sensing, I'm not going through the mass of it, that the time, this is avoiding the differential equations, you can't really do this, but by, you can see intuitively or heuristically, I suppose, that the period of the pendulum is independent of displacement. So if you displace it more, it will actually travel faster over that greater distance. So there's an experimental way of getting it, by actually taking a pendulum and looking at it. There's a sort of basic exploration of pendulum without actually solving it in detail, that heuristic way, and then there's the differential equation way. So from those party tricks, it's worthwhile having pi, the value of pi, related to the various units of orbit of the Earth around a year of seconds, and the diameter of the Earth, the square root of 10, knowing a bit about the formula of the pendulum, and I suppose thinking about it and actually going in and doing some of the more deeper maths with it. Thanks for listening. This is a sort of a light grade podcast. I'm not getting you to imagine two representations of the numbers at the same time. It's just one representation of a number. But it's telling you that a number that you take for granted has utility, which in the hand of someone who does calculations all the time can actually do some sort of speedy calculations and actually get a sense of where things are. And yeah, I recommend, I don't know, just looking at the number of pi and eventually the different digits, the different groups. I remember in groups of three, I see it sometimes a little bit. If I see pi, which is the wrong thing, it looks a slightly strange to explain, slightly. If say someone writes pi and it's wrong, it looks different to me. That's all I can say. So just look at it for a moment and have a think about it. In the meantime, keep on doing science. Thanks for listening.